killings, acts that some experts warn may amount to crimes of genocide.
What happened in the Syrian coastal region raises serious concerns about the future and the potential for further oppression. While I hope for a solution that satisfies all Syrians, the current situation leaves many in fear of what's to come.
As Syrians grapple with a deepening crisis, the constitutional declaration has only added to political discontent and growing fears about the country's future. With power concentrated at the top and violence escalating, hopes for democracy seem more distant than ever. Ali Mohammed, Damascus.
In his annual meeting with government officials and foreign ambassadors on the occasion of Eid al-Fitr, Iran's leader has called this religious celebration a shared practice that can help unite Muslim nations and as a result offer them protection against the enemy's aggression, such as the ongoing genocide in Gaza. An example of using people's support in a geographically strategic location to unite with the oppressed is Yemen, a nation that has successfully imposed maritime restrictions on the Israeli regime for its genocidal war on Gaza.
The Yemeni nation today has stood up against this aggression as we believe that the true power is with God Almighty. The Yemeni nation's trust is with God and the people's movement. With the honorable people standing by us in the resistance front, God willing, we will defeat the enemy.
In Iran, support for the Palestinian cause came with the 1979 Islamic Revolution.
From the early days of the victory of the Islamic Revolution, supporting Palestine has been one of the ideals of Iran to which the nation, the officials, and leader have remained loyal.
Since the parliament represents the people and they demand support for Palestine, we have taken legal action against the slaughter of Palestinians and the destruction of their land, among other steps.
Our stance is completely clear on the unwavering support for the resistance, which is a fundamental policy based on the ideals of the Islamic Revolution, as Iran's leader reiterated today. While resistance groups act independently, Iran will continue to support them.
Of course, standing up against world powers in solidarity with the oppressed comes at a price, which could be lessened if more Muslim nations joined in. And Eid al-Fitr is a great reminder of that responsibility.
For millions of Muslims across the world, Eid al-Fitr presents a fresh start and an opportunity to unite to restore peace and security and Muslim dignity. Mariam Azarchar, Tehran.
Amid relentless Israeli bombardment, hundreds of thousands of Palestinians in Gaza performed Eid al-Fitr prayers over the rubble of destroyed mosques in displacement shelters and beside the ruins of their homes. The destruction of homes and places of worship has left many Palestinians with nowhere to gather for Eid prayers, further deepening the sense of loss during this sacred time.
This Eid comes at a very depressing time and amid circumstances of death, starvation, and bombing. But the people in Gaza insist on celebrating Eid despite everything, even if it only means performing the Eid prayer.
Reviving the spirit of Eid is an attempt by the people of Gaza to momentarily escape the Israeli resumption of the genocide and the grave humanitarian crisis caused by the ongoing blockade. However, the Israeli occupation insists on staining this day in particular with bloodshed and massacres.
I only came to the Eid prayer to fulfill a religious duty. However, there is no joy or happiness for us. As you can see, the mosque is destroyed, but despite that, they cannot erase our faith from our hearts, and we must pray.
In the 24 hours leading up to the Eid, the Israeli massacre intensified, leaving at least 50 Palestinians killed, the majority of whom were young children playing close to the tents while dressed in minimally available Eid clothing.
This third Eid since the beginning of the genocide concludes with the sounds of the takbirs being mingled with the explosions of the artillery shells falling on the tents and the homes of the people, killing the children and burying their laughter under the rubble of their homes, and making this trip even a wider slaughterhouse at Ibrahim, Gaza City.
Here in Al Mawasi area in western Khan Yunis is one of the few amusement parks across the Gaza Strip, a place that once represented joy and celebratory moments for children and their families who are welcoming Eid after the end of the holy month of Ramadan. This place that was once vibrant with children and their families, the echoing of their laughter as they are riding these games that are now standing idle, surrounded by hundreds of tents that were constructed by the Palestinian families who were forced out of their towns and were forced into endless cycles of displacement for more than a year now. These tents are now overshadowing this scene of having these games and joy for children.
This park used to be a reminder of fun and joyful times for families. For 2 years now, the occupation has stolen our happiness, depriving us of all our special celebrations. It's Eid, a time when we should be baking cookies and decorating our homes, but instead, we are homeless. Happiness has become an impossible wish these days.
This amusement park was filled with green spaces to receive the families in such special occasions. But what really gave this park its joyful aspect is the existence of many of the games like the Ferris wheel, the pirate ships, the roller coaster, and all our modest games. But today, as the families are welcoming the Eid, these games stand idle. There's no way to power them because the families can barely find and secure their basic humanitarian needs. And now all these games are surrounded by this miserable scenes of tents, of displacement and suffering.
As we welcome Eid, all we wish for is for this genocide to end. For a year, we have been away from our homes, sheltering in a place we never imagined we'd be. We once brought our children here to celebrate and have fun on this special day, but now we can't even get them with new clothes or offer them safety.
For the second year in a row, the Palestinians across the Gaza Strip welcome the festive Eid al-Fitr with nothing but more miseries and suffering. This place that should be filled with the laughters of children is now covered and overshadowed by the miserable scene of displacement that doesn't seem to end any soon for the families here. Ahmed al-Najjar, Al-Mawasi.
Amid the devastation and despair, the people of Gaza have faced relentless bombardment, starvation, and displacement. Yet through this enduring crisis, one thing has remained unshaken in their collective spirit, their unwavering commitment to their lawful right of resistance.
After nearly 18 months of genocide, the people of Gaza have taken to the streets in an uprising against occupation, mass killings, and starvation, especially in Beit Lahia. The Israeli regime attempts to manipulate and sow division against the resistance is doomed to fail. Our resistance is inseparable from our existence, an undeniable right we will never relinquish.
Despite its advanced weaponry and relentless attempts to crush Gaza's spirit, the Israeli occupation has failed to break the will of the Palestinian people. Its brutal campaigns targeting civilian areas have only laid bare the true barbarity of the regime.
As Palestinians, our heart and soul are with the resistance. Our people remain aware of Israeli conspiracies. What the occupation failed to achieve through military force, it will not accomplish through deceptive plots.
While Israel's genocide continues, a more subtle and insidious attempt is being made, exploiting people's marches against the genocide in Beit Lahia, who erupted calling for the end of the Israeli war.
As the Israeli brutality intensifies, it is clear that the Gaza Strip will continue to be the battleground, not only for physical survival, but for the ideological and cultural soul of the Palestinian people. Ad Ibrahim, Gaza City.
The Israeli regime launched new airstrikes on several towns and cities across Lebanon on Friday in violation of a ceasefire with the Arab country. After two drone attacks, Israeli rockets targeted the Beirut southern suburbs, destroying two buildings.
As Lebanon marked Al-Quds Day, the Israeli occupation forces continue to pound the country. And for the first time since the ceasefire, Israel struck a residential neighborhood in South Beirut in an act which could jeopardize the already fragile truce.
The sounds of explosions were heard. Ambulances and firefighter trucks ran to the site. Yet the rallies to commemorate Al-Quds Day did not stop. Hezbollah officials stress that despite the Israeli threats and continuous aggression, the resistance in Lebanon will not forsake Al-Quds.
On this blessed day, and in light of the current circumstances, we say that we renew our pledge to Al-Quds. We will not forsake Al-Quds. Together with all the honorable people in the nation, in Palestine and the Arab and Muslim world, and with the free people of the world, we will hold the banner of Al-Quds.
Palestinian activists also stress that Imam Khomeini knew that defeating the arrogant tyrants and achieving victory is only possible if the Muslims and Arabs were united and mobilized for the sake of Al-Quds.
Our enemies have failed in their attempts to break the resistance despite the continued atrocities. Their barbaric genocide against the people of Palestine and the aggression on Lebanon and Yemen since the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran. They have tried to weaken Iran since it is the only firm supporter of the resistance in the region, but they have failed.
It is Al-Quds that unites the Arabs and Muslims, and on this day we see the culmination of the efforts to face the common enemy. It is the shout of the oppressed in the region, but it is also the shout of the human conscience to confront the occupiers and liberate the Holy Land.
People of various faiths took part in Al-Quds Day celebrations in solidarity with Palestine and highlighted resistance as the only path to victory against the occupying regime. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Rabbi English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to Rabbi English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Rabbi English Radio.
Supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day he appointed for a rising. To thee belongs praise, for thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst thou willed, thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to thee belongs praise, for thou created, then proportioned, and ordained, and decreed, and gave death and bestowed life, and made sick and healed, and made well and afflicted, and sat upon the throne and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure, and provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to thee, to be joyful in worshipping thee, to be desirous of thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom thou wilt.
From Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome everyone. Now the holy fasting month of Ramadan for Muslims is a month during which many traditions are observed, from introspection to strengthening familial and community ties onto charity and other acts of kindness. Upon conclusion of the holy month, there's a day of celebration called Eid or Aid. Eid or Eid al-Fitr or Eid al-Fitr is a day of love and giving, of celebration, joy, cherishing family and community. So what do you think the last two Ramadans were like for the Palestinians of Gaza, or the last two Eids? How do you celebrate while mourning your loved ones, while hungry, broken, displaced, and traumatized? And while the Israeli occupation bombs continue raining down all around you, leaving you with no safe place to celebrate or mark this occasion, this is the topic of tonight's Spotlight program. And now, let's begin with a quick report.
Amid relentless Israeli bombardment, hundreds of thousands of Palestinians in Gaza performed Eid al-Fitr prayers over the rubble of destroyed mosques in displacement shelters and besides the ruins of their homes. The destruction of homes and places of worship has left many Palestinians with nowhere to gather for Eid prayers, further deepening the sense of loss during this sacred time.
This Eid comes at a very depressing time and amid circumstances of death, starvation, and bombing. But the people in Gaza insist on celebrating Eid despite everything, even if it only means performing the Eid prayer.
Reviving the spirit of Eid is an attempt by the people of Gaza to momentarily escape the Israeli resumption of the genocide and the grave humanitarian crisis caused by the ongoing blockade. However, the Israeli occupation insists on staining this day in particular with bloodshed and massacres.
I only came to the Eid prayer to fulfill a religious duty. However, there is no joy or happiness for us. As you can see, the mosque is destroyed, but despite that, they cannot erase our faith from our hearts, and we must pray.
In the 24 hours leading up to the Eid, the Israeli massacre intensified, leaving at least 50 Palestinians killed, the majority of whom were young children playing close to the tents while dressed in minimally available Eid clothing.
This third Eid since the beginning of the genocide concludes with the sounds of the takbirs being mingled with the explosions of the artillery shells falling on the tents and the homes of the people, killing the children and burying their laughter under the rubble of their homes, and making this trip even a wider slaughterhouse. Ghad Ibrahim, Gaza City.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
And now for our guests. Joining us is Sarah Flounders from the International Action Center out of New York. And Christopher Helali, researcher and political analyst, joining us out of Verschar, Vermont, U.S. as well. Hello, and I'd like to welcome you both to the program. I guess, Ms. Flounders, we'll start with you. Welcome to our Spotlight program. Pleasure to have you, ma'am. 80 people have been killed in the past 48 hours in Gaza through Israeli attacks, according to the Gaza Health Ministry, raising the number, overall number, since March 18th, when Israel completely put an end to its participation in the Gaza ceasefire, to now 1,001 in less than 2 weeks. Your opening thoughts, please, on this year's Eid Fitr massacre in Gaza by the Zionist entity.
Well, it is horrific. There's no other way to say it. And it is deliberate, and the Zionists keep careful track of every celebration and holiday and religious significance, and how to bring insult to it, how to use it to grind down the Palestinian people. Instead, they become more steadfast, stronger in their determination, but it is a real and systematic and continuing effort to insult the resistance and to try to break the resistance. It is totally backed by the U.S. in full support, knowing exactly what Ramadan means and especially what Eid al-Fitr means throughout all of the Muslim world. And so to make insults, to make massacres on this day is very, very intentional. And I think the condemnations around the world are very important, but they don't end the crimes because, as I say, there's total U.S. support for these crimes, and they even help to publicize it because they're trying to send a message to the whole world that there's no crime they won't commit, no matter how disgusting or horrific.
Thank you, ma'am. And Christopher Helali, welcome to the conversation there, bud. Good to have you. Christopher, the occupation could have very well stuck to the January 19th Gaza ceasefire agreement, which we should add Hamas completely respected throughout the first phase, and the entity, the occupation, never allowed it to reach the second phase. Your initial thoughts, please, on how this all could have been prevented, the Ramadan and Eid al-Fitr bloodshed in Gaza.
Well, first of all, Eid Mubarak to all of your listeners and to everyone in our Islamic community. Of course, these massacres are ongoing because, as rightfully pointed out by Sarah Flanders, the Zionists and their allies do not care about these holidays in terms of moments of celebration and unity, but to use them rather as days of bloodshed. And so we've seen the bloodshed in Gaza on these supposed to be most holy days, celebratory days at the end of the month of fasting. And we've also seen bloodshed in Yemen and Lebanon, where bombing has resumed by the Zionists and their allies. So, of course, this bloodshed could have totally been prevented had the Zionists and their allies in the West been committed to peace. But they're not committed to peace. They are committed to a path of war. They're committed to a path of genocide. They're committed to a path of domination in the region. And so what prospects of peace do we have if they are so committed to destroying any resistance to their access of domination on the region? That's the real concern, is how to overcome their stranglehold. And the only way to do that is through resistance. But as you can see, even resistance in words, even resistance, religious resistance, is met with brutal and barbaric acts such as the Zionists have committed in Gaza in recent days.
And Ms. Flounders, the way these the Eid massacres have unfolded, practically all civilians, many children, you see them wearing their deceased, their corpses draped in their Eid celebratory clothes. They're very extremely disheartening to see these images, and you know, lives poignantly cut short, ma'am. And to your point, what is achieved from this deliberate, systematic onslaught this level of barbarism on these kind of special holidays?
Well, I think what's shown, what's exposed to the whole world, and what was shown on that signal chat of the war makers planning their bombing of Yemen is just how absolutely ruthless they are and how much these attacks are intended to strike the most defenseless in order to send a message of ruthlessness. There's no other message that they want to send. Clearly, they know that there's no way to respond to such crimes, and particularly the striking of children. I do find in all of this the images you just showed of parents, even in the midst of rubble, they're pushing their children on swings. They're doing everything they can to help to bring joy when there is no joy, but to share with their children real traditions, the meaning of this day. And that determination does give confidence to the world of just how steadfast the Palestinians are and how steadfast the entire axis of resistance is. So while the U.S. and the Zionists may be intending one message, the message that's absorbed by the people of the whole world, by people of conscience everywhere, is an entirely different message, that it takes continued determination to survive this level of brutality. And that's a very important message, because they want to say there's nothing we won't do unless you bow down and accept complete ruin. And clearly the Palestinians are saying, as Chris very rightfully saying, they refuse. They refuse, and that is the message I think we need to draw, to continue every effort. And just thinking of the past days and the coming days, there's one demonstration, one rally after another here on El Quds Day, on Friday, who are out in force, and on Land Day, on Sunday, and on every one of these days, there is actions, there's protests, there's arrests, there's young students facing deportation on no grounds except that they spoke out. So I think our message needs to in every way reflect the determination we see, and to stand wholeheartedly with Palestine and with resistance during this entire period and into the future.
And Christopher, imagine bombing and killing an entire family. We saw it last night, 9 people of a single family killed by an Israeli bomb. Imagine that happening not just on a holiday or under any circumstance in the States. If somehow the enemy bombs on Thanksgiving Day a family, or Christmas Day, a family sitting at their dinner table in Vermont, where you're at, or in New York. Imagine the kind of global pushback. And Ms. Sarah Flounders alluded to it earlier, that global condemnation is extremely important. Why are women and children's lives in Gaza not getting the coverage or the appeal or the uniform blanket condemnation that they deserve? Are their lives any less important for world leaders? Why are they not speaking up on this on these atrocities?
Regrettably, for the West, the lives and the blood of Palestinians is cheap. It's cheaper than the lives of those in the West. And that has been the case for many, many decades. In fact, some would say it's been the case since the beginning of this imperialist and colonialist onslaught on the region. And so when you see entire families wiped out, not only in these brutal massacres, these barbaric massacres now, but throughout the course of this genocide, we've seen entire families completely erased from history that have been there for millennia, and they're gone. And when you see that, and you see that there is limited outcry in the West, because, of course, it's the West that has imposed this brutality upon the people of the region. It is the West that supports the Zionist entity, that created it to begin with, and imposes its will upon the Palestinian people, who are the natives of that land. When you see all of this happening, you understand that for the West, there is no conscience, there is no moral or ethical values that are deep-rooted within them. There is only the value of dominance, the value of supremacy, and the value of conquest. So when all of that is added together, clearly it becomes apparent that they do not care about these Palestinian families, whether women or children, as you are rightly saying, in their festive attire for this most holy of celebrations. But what ends up happening is that their lives are devalued. They are equated with quote-unquote terrorism and things like that, when they are merely innocent children, 4, 5, 6 years old, at the age of some of my children. And so when you see that, it exposes the barbarity of the West. It exposes the fact that it has no leg to stand on. It has no more justification to speak about human rights. It actually never did, because it itself is the greatest purveyor of violence and violations of human rights around the world. So that is why we see the press in the global South speaking so much about what's happening in Gaza, speaking truth to power, especially the power of the global North. But of course, we don't see it as much in the West, because the West, of course, has its agenda and is also dominated by very powerful interests that continue to try to highlight the Zionist claims and the Zionist perspective, but not the Palestinians' claims and perspective, and the fact that they are the ones suffering under this brutality since October the 7th.
And Sarah Flounders, I also want to come back to you, because you initially mentioned the importance of strong global condemnation. We heard it earlier today in a speech by leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. He said that global unity is very important right now to push back against the Zionist onslaught and massacres against Palestinians, where we have yet to see it. And I just want to ask you, I mean, Israel has, I mean, isolated and ostracized over the past 18 months than it's been, possibly since its establishment, but not on the level, ma'am, that is warranted by this level of death and destruction and genocide in Gaza. Why?
A lot of it is the domination, the control of the huge corporate media that's owned by the billionaires. And I think we need to find new targets, new ways of explaining this reality. Just to give one example, tomorrow here in New York, we're having a march on Billionaire Row. It's the wealthiest zip code in the U.S. today, where really the multi-billionaires live. And it's a march for Gaza, saying, you know, that Gaza is for the Palestinians, not for the billionaires. That's what Trump proposed. Make it a resort. Just drive the people out. We need to respond to that. We need to respond again and again with ways of explaining and targeting who's responsible for these unspeakable crimes. Because solidarity really is the one weapon we have. Human consciousness and increasingly standing together in unity, this becomes very powerful. And it can't be pushed back as people understand it. Very important, the statements about the world coming together, because mm-hmm. that's what's happening. These actions are acts of total desperation. The Zionists, and also U.S. imperialism, frankly, is frantic that they can't stop this level of just sheer human resistance and will. So from here, I think we need to find new ways of expressing this, of encouraging those who are facing real repression right here now to stand firm. And as I say, we're going to do a march on Billionaire Row for Gaza, because that's who they want to steal everything from. And we need to answer that in real and living ways.
And good luck with that, Ms. Flounders. And Christopher, it seems throughout the years that the occupation has been extra provocative and aggressive when it comes to holy Islamic traditions and occasions and even sacred sanctities. We've seen every year through the holy fasting month of Ramadan, they've attacked worshipers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound or prevented them access to get into the compound. We've seen, on the flip side of that, settlers allowed into the compound to insult, to engage in inflammatory actions toward Palestinians. There, to Sarah Flounders' point earlier, what is the point of the systematic policy of the Israelis to take these sacred times for the Muslims, and it's not just Muslims, I should add, and I'll bring that up later too, but sanctities, holy sanctities of the Palestinians, and try to degrade them on these occasions?
Well, of course, it is policy of the Zionist entity there to not only target Muslim holy sites and holy days and days of prayer and fasting, but also Christian sites. And we've seen this, that Palestinian Christians and Muslims are united in their oppression by the Zionist entity. We've seen it with various churches in Al-Quds, in Jerusalem, belonging to Armenians and other Palestinian Orthodox, Greek Orthodox Christians. And we've seen the level of depravity and escalations by not only the Zionist regime, but by settler, you know, far-right settler groups that are now instilling fear in local sheikhs, in Islamic leaders, in the worshipful and the faithful, and also with priests and different other communities in the region. So this is done to not only target these communities, but to humiliate them and to basically emphasize that they are not welcome in the land that they have known as home for millennia, that they are not welcome anymore, and that this is part of the ongoing supremacy of the Zionists, and that this land is only for one group of people and for nobody else. And it's meant as a humiliation, not only for the people of the locales, of the region, but for the wider Islamic world, for the wider world of Christians as well, who are also, especially Orthodox Christians, who are facing this type of repression within the Zionist-controlled areas. So that's a big cause for concern, because it affects the religious sentiments of many people, and it shows the gross violations of human rights and human dignity of people to worship freely, to go to their places of worship in peace, and to protect those places of worship from the encroachments of these groups that seek to not only stop the prayers there, but in the case of the Al-Aqsa compound, to take it over, to destroy it, and to rebuild the Third Temple for a very fringe far-right group that has grown in dominance in the Zionist entity.
Mm. And Ms. Sarah Flounders, I'd like to also end our conversation with just that this targeting of religious occasions and sanctities is not exclusive to Muslims. The discrimination, the disrespect. We saw Christmas. We saw settlers walking by, and the images were everywhere online, if you remember, settlers walking by the entrance and the walls of a church there in Jerusalem, Al-Quds, old city, spitting on the wall, on the entrance. And then when the father came out, Father Nicodemus Schnabel, He was about to engage with a reporter when he was accosted by two settlers who insulted him, spit on him, and kicked him. Now, it may be shocking, these things happen, and I'm sure they happen everywhere, but we never see people with this kind of mindset receive endless weapons and political cover to remain this backwards and this repulsive anywhere on the planet, do we?
No, there's almost, it's hard to imagine anything that would match this level of actual fascist training in the IDF forces. They're really trained in the most provocative, disgusting, offensive, racist, abusive ways. Trained to target children, trained to target religious symbols. Now, here's the real contradiction, even here in the US today, and that is every politician elected to office will back up this war, Republican or Democrat. People thought, oh, Biden wasn't doing enough. They had some expectation it would be better with Trump. Huh. The whole government system is totally aligned with imperialist war. And yet, in every poll, the majority of the population here in the U.S. is sympathetic to Palestine. But of course, their voices aren't heard, don't count. And the problems are becoming so great here that it attempts to push away any awareness of the world. And yet, that's got to be our continuing and deep concern. So these contradictions will come back and haunt the U.S. empire. They will, because its lessons are being learned even by the population here as their life difficulties increase. Who are our friends? Who are our allies? And where we have to stand against this government that on every level is criminal and stealing the resources right from here to pay for more and more war and humiliation. I think we have to make those links every single day and every message that we put out. Who benefits, which is the billionaires and the war makers, and who pays for these crimes. So saying no in organized and militant ways, I think, has to be on our agenda going forward, because the international organizations, beyond issuing statements, aren't doing much. And so there's a greater responsibility right here to answer to these attacks.
All right, very well. I want to thank the both of you for joining us on our Spotlight program. Stay safe to the both of you. Appreciate having you both on. Ms. Sarah Flounders there from the International Action Center joining us out of New York, and Christopher Hilali, researcher and political analyst from Verchères, Vermont. And this brings us to the end of your Spotlight program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance has criticized Denmark's treatment of Greenland and says Greenland should come under America's security umbrella. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story. U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance told troops in Greenland that the United States has to gain control of the Arctic island to stop the threat of China and Russia, as he doubled down on criticizing Denmark, which he said has not done a good job in Greenland. Under increasingly strained relations between the White House, Greenland, and Denmark, the U.S. Vice President said during a visit to Pituffik Space Base on Friday, 28th of March, he said, "Our message to Denmark is very simple. You have not done a good job by the people of Greenland. You have underinvested in the people of Greenland, and you have underinvested in the security architecture of this incredible, beautiful landmass." Speaking alongside U.S. troops, as well as Donald Trump's National Security Advisor Mike Waltz, who's at the center of the Signal Message Group's security breach, Waltz's wife, Julia Nashewat, U.S. Energy Secretary Chris Wright, and the senator from Utah, Mike Lee, he said the Trump administration's argument was not with the people of Greenland, rather it was with the leadership in Denmark, which he accused of having underinvested in Greenland and its security. J.D. Vance added, "That simply must change. It is the policy of the United States that that will change." Greenland, he said, would be better off coming under the United States' security umbrella than you would be under Denmark's security umbrella. Vance claimed the territory was not being kept safe by Denmark from a lot of very aggressive incursions from Russia, from China, and from other nations. Shortly after, he flew into the ice-locked U.S. military base in Pituffik in northwestern Greenland with his wife Usha and other senior U.S. officials on Friday. The vice president told U.S. troops he was really interested in Arctic security. He said, "As you all know, it is a big issue and it's only going to get bigger over the coming decades." In the White House, meanwhile, Donald Trump reiterated his previous claims that the U.S. needs Greenland for world peace. Trump said, "I think Greenland understands that the United States should own it." Speaking at a press conference on Friday, 28th of March, Donald Trump said, "And if Denmark and the European Union don't understand it, we have to explain it to them. We need Greenland. Very importantly, for international security, we have to have Greenland. There are," he claimed, "Chinese and Russian ships all over the place." Just hours before J.D. Vance's arrival in Newark, political leaders agreed to form a broad four-party coalition government in a show of national unity. In a rebuke to the Trump administration and its public campaign to gain control of Greenland, four of Greenland's five political parties signed the coalition agreement on Friday, 28th of March, which states on page one, "Greenland belongs to us." There has been a week of heightened tension amid already strained relations between the United States, Greenland, and Denmark as a result of Donald Trump's repeated threats to acquire Greenland. Writing on social media before his plane landed, J.D. Vance said, "We're on our way and looking forward to it." Greenland, a former Danish colony, is a semi-autonomous territory within the Kingdom of Denmark. Earlier in the week, the Danish Prime Minister, Mette Frederiksen, accused the United States of putting unacceptable pressure on Greenland and Denmark to give up the territory. Mette Frederiksen added, "It's pressure that we will resist." On Thursday, 22nd of March, Donald Trump renewed his vow to take control of the island. Trump said, "We need Greenland for national security and international security, so we'll go as far as we have to go. We need Greenland, and the world needs us to have Greenland, including Denmark. Denmark has to have us have Greenland, and we'll see what happens. But if we don't have Greenland, we can't have great international security." The U.S. delegation took off from Maryland and were due to fly directly to the American military base in northwestern Greenland. The U.S. gained the military base after a 1951 defense agreement between Denmark and the United States. The delegation's plans were hastily rescheduled just days before to cut out visits to the capital, Newark, and a dog sled race in Sisimiut after widespread outrage in Newark and Copenhagen over the unsolicited trip. Originally, the second lady, Usha Vance, was scheduled to travel without the vice president. America's national broadcaster CBS News has also covered the same story. Vice President J.D. Vance said on Friday, 28th of March, during a day trip to a U.S. base in Greenland, that the Trump administration doesn't think that military force is ever going to be necessary there, just the same day that President Trump said, "We have to have Greenland." J.D. Vance visited the Pituffik Space Base, the northernmost U.S. military installation, along with Second Lady Usha Vance, National Security Advisor Mike Waltz, Secretary of Energy Chris Wright, and Senator Mike Lee of Utah. While there, the Vice President blasted Denmark for its handling of the island. As the Trump White House eyes the semi-autonomous Danish territory, despite opposition from residents and leaders. While J.D. Vance was there, President Trump reiterated his strong desire to acquire the Arctic island. Trump said, "We need Greenland, very importantly, for international security." Speaking to reporters in the White House, Donald Trump said, "We have to have Greenland. It's not a question of, do you think we can do without it? We can't." Donald Trump hasn't ruled out military force in Greenland, while Vice President J.D. Vance on Friday said he believes the people of Greenland will seek independence from Denmark. A reporter asked J.D. Vance if his message is consistent with President Trump's message. Vance said the president wants more of a U.S. presence in Greenland, but the president has said clearly he doesn't think that military force is going to be necessary. J.D. Vance added, "What we think is going to happen is that the Greenlanders are going to choose through self-determination to become independent of Denmark, and then we're going to have conversations with the people of Greenland from there on," Vance said. "So I think talking about anything too far in the future is way too premature. We do not think that military force is ever going to be necessary. We think this makes sense. And because we think the people of Greenland are rational and good, we think we're going to be able to cut a deal. The deal, Donald Trump style, will ensure the security of this territory, but also it will ensure the security of the United States." J.D. Vance said his trip to the base helped him see close up how critical Greenland is for America's national security. "If an enemy fired a missile on the United States, it would be the American soldiers at the Greenland base who would alert their countrymen," he said. Vance also reiterated that the United States knows that both Russia and China are taking a serious interest in the Arctic. And he said the U.S. needs to make sure it's leading in the Arctic. J.D. Vance also recognized Denmark has been an important security partner in the past. But he launched criticisms of Denmark, saying the U.S. base in Greenland is less secure than it was decades ago because of Denmark's stewardship.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The United Nations has rejected Israel's claim that there is sufficient food supplies in the besieged Gaza Strip. The Yemeni army conducts a new anti-US operation targeting an American aircraft carrier and its warships in the Red Sea with missiles and drones. And also coming up, Iran rejects Trump's threats about using military force to bomb Iranian nuclear sites, saying there is no military option regarding the country's nuclear program. Hello and welcome to your world news. Palestinians across the besieged Gaza Strip have endured another day of carnage as Israeli strikes continued unabated, claiming more civilian lives. One of the regime's latest attacks hit a house near the Islamic Bank, east of the Nusayrat refugee camp in central Gaza, killing two civilians and injuring several.